for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The longer the oil spills out of the Deep Horizon well, the more money BP loses as claims continue to mount. Last month, President Obama appointed Kenneth Feinberg to administer the $20 billion Victims Fund. In the meantime, BP has reportedly stepped up its charm offensive to reassure key partners and investors of its fiscal health. Joining me in the studio, Stephen Mufson of The Washington Post, joining us from a studio in London, James Herron of Dow Jones. And first, Kenneth Feinberg joins us by phone from his office here in Washington. We're going to open the phones early this morning in order to allow you to ask your questions of Mr. Feinberg. So join us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Mr. Feinberg, it's good to talk with you again.
Glad to be on the show again. Thank you.
Have you fully taken this job on as a day-to-day job yet?
Yes. We are now transitioning. The Gulf Coast Claims Facility will, in the next few weeks, not months, replace BP's effort at receiving and processing these claims for compensation.
Can you tell me how much BP itself has already paid out?
BP has already paid out on its own about $140 million in emergency payments to Gulf Coast residents, and that is not coming out of the $20 billion.
Why is that?
Because the $20 billion escrow account is just now being legally established, and in the interim, BP is continuing to pay these claims as they come in.
Okay. Tell me exactly how you plan to go about determining which claims are legitimate.
Well, it's going to be a challenge,
yep.
As you know.
Yep.
I think that we will take the approach that I took in the 9/11 Victim Compensation Fund. I will look to applicable law, federal maritime law, the Pollution Control Act, state tort law, and using that as sort of a foundation, I will then exercise a sound discretion in deciding what constitutes an eligible versus an ineligible claim.
Well, and that's what I want to follow up on, because I want to ask about fishermen and others who've had only cash transactions, who perhaps have not paid income tax. Are you going to base your reimbursements to those who make claims who have no record of income tax payment in the past?
That's not critical to me. There's nothing illegal about having an all-cash business. Now, you got to corroborate your claim. That is important. I can't simply evaluate a claim without some sort of record. It doesn't have to be a tax return. But I certainly expect that a claim from a fisherman who's in an all-cash business, that's fine. There's nothing illegal about that. But I want to know how you corroborate the amount that you are now requesting, and that fisherman must expect that I'll be sending him or her a 1099 tax form. I mean, I have to comply with all federal tax requirements.
And what about the reimbursements to individuals who own properties along beaches, For example, we've now heard that there are globs of oil showing up on Texas beaches. Now, if globs of oil are showing up, perhaps people are not showing up, and therefore proprietors along those beaches are not taking in what they would have taken in otherwise.
That's easy. Your hypothetical is an easy case. I'm not worried that much about compensating homeowners or proprietors who have oil on the beach, on their property. They should be compensated for the cleanup costs of removing that oil, and they should be compensated for lost profits if they run a proprietorship that depends on that beach, which is now uninhabitable because of oil. Those are the relatively easy cases. The tough cases are the motel that's three blocks from the beach that says, I've lost 20% of my business because of oil on the beach. Now, the oil isn't on my beach. In fact, even a tougher case, I've lost 20% even though there's no oil on the beach. But people think there's oil on the beach because they read the newspapers and they don't come to Mobile, Alabama, or Pensacola, Florida, or New Orleans. I mean, Mr. Feinberg, that's a much tougher call because now it isn't the oil that impacts your business. It's the reputation, the publicity that leads to a drop-off in tourism. That's a tough call.
Let me ask you what kind of support staff you're going to have. The reason I ask is that there have been so many reports of people trying to call into BP, trying to submit claims, trying to reach people representing BP. How much of a staff are you going to have to respond to those people calling in to submit their claims?
To BP's credit, they've set up 35 claims offices throughout the Gulf. They've hired about 1,300 people. I'll supplement those people. I'm not going to reinvent the wheel. There's 35 offices already in place. I'll use those people. I'll supplement them, add additional people where needed, 1-800 numbers. We're setting up a process where anybody can file a claim online without even visiting a claim center. So I anticipate that there will continue to be a very large infrastructure to process these claims and accelerate the timing of the payments.
Now, you've also made the pledge to make this claims process totally transparent. What do you mean by that? How will you do that?
Two ways. First, anybody who wants a copy should be ready within the next week or so of the Gulf Coast Claims Facility Protocol, the rules of the facility. That'll be available to anybody who wants it. It's a draft public document. I'll want comment on it before I finalize it. I'd like to know what people think about it. Very important. Secondly, I think that the public and our elected representatives should have some data that demonstrates how efficient the program is in processing claims. I'm not going to give away private, confidential information about an individual or a business, but I do think that data is important in easing the concern of our elected officials and regulators that the program is working efficiently and effectively.
Right now, Kenneth Feinberg, BP's liability for economic damages caused by the spill has been limited to $75 million. How much of what you foresee is that going to cover?
Not much. They've already paid out $135 million. They've voluntarily waived that cap and have paid almost double already. Even before the facility's up and running, they've also agreed, as you know, Diane, to put into escrow $20 billion. So that technical legal $75 million cap limit has already been voluntarily waived by BP.
then there is also the question of which I'm sure you're well aware. What happens if BP goes bankrupt?
That would be a disaster. It would be a disaster for claimants. It would be a disaster for the environment in the Gulf. It would be a horrible tragedy, frankly, for the thousands and thousands of people and businesses employed by BP. I shudder to think about the consequences to our economy and to the people who live in that region. If BP went bankrupt.
Are you privy to information that reassures you that BP will not go bankrupt and will therefore be able to meet those claims?
I'm not concerned about bankruptcy, not because I'm privy to information, but because, like you and your listeners, we read the newspapers. And it's pretty clear to me, there's an article even in today's newspapers, that BP will be able to finance its cleanup and claims obligations in the Gulf.
So that is one point that doesn't worry you. What does worry you the most?
Well, I got plenty of worries. I would say the worry in this BP matter, what worries me the most, is making sure that that people file a claim. I can't help compensate people if they don't know about the program, if they're reluctant to file, if they think it's a trick, if they think I'm not impartial, if they think I'm just, you know, working for BP.
All right, we'll take just a short break here. We'll be back after a moment. And welcome back. With us on the line is Kenneth Feinberg. He's the government-appointed administrator of the Gulf Claims Facility. He's also, of course, former special master of the U.S. government's September 11th Victim Compensation Fund and a special master for TARP Executive Compensation, a position from which he's stepping down soon. Thank goodness, because he's got enough on his plate, don't you, Ken Feinberg?
I would say that's a fair statement.
All right. And here in the studio is Stephen Mufsen. He's energy correspondent for The Washington Post. He'd like to ask a question. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, my question is, if someone gets paid out of the $20 billion escrow fund, how does that affect their litigation claims, if they have any?
Great question. First, if they get paid as BP has been paying, emergency payments to pay a mortgage, finance their business, make their car payment, there is absolutely no obligation whatsoever. It is, in effect, a payment without obligation. It no way impacts your rights. At some point in the future, after the oil stops, I will tender a final payment in a fixed amount for any present and or future loss. That'll be calculated by my office, and I will tender that check to that claimant. The claimant will then have a voluntary right to either accept it and waive any subsequent right to litigate against BP, or reject the amount and preserve their litigation options.
So in that case, they'll have a chance. I mean, I guess part of the temptation will be that you get paid a lot faster if they do it through you. But I suppose it's conceivable they might get more if they went to court.
I emphasize your word conceivable. I think it is highly unlikely that a person rejecting my payment and my presumption that these people should get paid and then goes to court and litigates for 5 years, maybe doesn't win. If I didn't pay more, why would a court give them more? And even if they do win, then pay your lawyer. So I think that I'm hoping that people will see that this process is claimant-friendly and will come into the fund.
All right, Dan. Now, a question from James Herron, who the Dow Jones Newswire reporter who's based in London. He's on the line with us. Good morning, James. Go right ahead.
Good morning, Diane. I was wondering, Kenneth, will there be any limit in terms of time or geography on who is eligible to issue claims?
I'm not sure I heard the question. Is there a time limit?
Yes, in terms of time or geography.
Certainly not geography, although it's a little bit difficult for me to envision the validity, the eligibility of a claim from, say, Boston, Massachusetts. But in terms of a time limit, I don't think there's a time limit in terms of your filing a claim, a date from the time that you were damaged. I do think that the facility, once it's up and running, will have a time limit. I don't think this will be an open-ended, permanent facility that I'm creating. As with 9/11, I think after 2 years or 3 years from the time the oil stops, I think the facility will then terminate and no longer be available to accept claims.
Follow up, James.
Well, the reason I ask this is I heard this morning that some bluefin tuna fishermen based in Prince Edward Island in Canada are considering filing a claim because they're concerned that the Gulf of Mexico spawning grounds.
We have lost James Herron. Go right ahead. Can you answer the question, Ken?
I'd have to examine such a claim. And if, in fact, Prince Edward Island is somehow adversely impacted directly as a result of the spill, Herron can't migrate to Prince Edward Island, etc., and therefore there's been a loss of natural resources, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I'd have to look at the facts, but I would take a look at that claim, yes.
All right. Here's a posting on Facebook from John, who says, who will pay when oil washes up 6 months or a year from now on beaches?
BP. That's part of the $20 billion that BP is setting aside in escrow, guaranteed to pay those claims over the next 3 or 4 years. So, and if that's not enough, BP has also agreed to honor any subsequent financial obligation arising out of the spill.
All right. I'm going to open the phones now, Ken Feinberg, to a listener in Orlando, Florida. Good morning, Jay. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane. The question I have is, how does the new entity plan to assess non-economic damages to affected people from the spill, or is this something that is going to be handled solely through litigation?
That's a good question. I think that if you don't have physical damage, if you are claiming mental anguish without physical injury, I do not believe that this facility will find such a claim eligible, and that will have to be litigated. I think that right now, under applicable law, especially maritime law and state law, I think that we are looking, frankly, at physical damage. If mental anguish alone were compensable, I'm not sure there's enough money in the world to pay everybody who could file a claim then.
Stephen.
It's a good question. It's a very good question.
Well, how about things like health impacts? For example,
oh, that's different.
People are breathing,
but
the impact, of course, could not be completely obvious within the time frame you're talking about for this fund.
We had that problem, Orlando questioner. We had that problem in the 9/11 fund. Those claims, physical injury, respiratory illness, those claims are eligible. Now, you still have to corroborate your claim. You've got to show that you have a medical condition arising out of the oil. You've got to corroborate that claim. We would then attempt, it's not easy, but we did it in 9/11, we would attempt to calculate the degree of disability caused by that injury and offer a lump sum payment. Now, if the claimant believes they may get sicker over the years ahead, a latent injury, they may decide not to take the tender check, but that'll be up to them.
All right.
Those claims are eligible.
Jay, thanks for your call. Here's an email from Frank who says, will the BP fund include money to restore the wildlife habitat after all the cleanup is complete?
Yes. Restoration costs are covered by the $20 billion. Now, if those restoration costs are the result of an individual or a business claim, a private claim, they fall within my jurisdiction. If those claims for restoration are government claims brought by the state of Florida or the state of Alabama, etc., those claims are covered by the $20 billion, but they are not subject to my jurisdiction.
You'd have to
go directly against BP.
Let's take a caller in Washington, North Carolina. William, good morning to you.
Hi. My question is, how are you going to compensate someone who sells their fish and their product off the back of their boat and doesn't have any receipts to prove how much they make?
Well, you're going to have to corroborate it somehow. One way you corroborate it is with some sort of documentation. It doesn't have to be receipts. It can be a checkbook, a ledger. I've got to be ever vigilant. I can't just pay claims that are not corroborated. I got to avoid fraud at all costs. For emergency payments, perhaps somebody will vouch for the individual, the ship captain, or a priest, or a sheriff, or a mayor. There's got to be some corroboration. I can't simply pay claims on a request without some documentation or some evidence that the claim is valid.
William, are you in that situation, and can you somehow corroborate your earnings?
Oh, no, I'm not in that situation. I just...
It's a very good question.
I heard a piece that was done a couple of weeks ago about a family that doesn't do anything but seafood business, and they had a lawyer that they went to, and the lawyer was talking about all of his other clients that come in, and some of them are in that situation.
Yeah, I would think you're going to face a fair number of those, Ken Feinberg, and have to deal with them extraordinarily judiciously. Let's take a caller in Cincinnati, Ohio. Good morning, Patty.
Hi, Diane. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last night on Keith Olbermann's show, he reported that the law states claims have to be filed by the 80th day after a disaster for the oil company to be held responsible, and that the 80th day is today. My concern is that, you know, there are a lot of people who won't know for a long time if they've been affected due to the dispersants that have been used. And I'm wondering if your guest is saying that would his power supersedes the law as it's stated, or will BP be able to fall back on that law?
You'll be able to file. First of all, the 80th day or whatever on the show, I don't know what that refers to. The oil is still spilling out of the Gulf. And until the oil stops, it's very, very difficult for anybody to file a claim not knowing whether that oil will ultimately disperse onto their property or impact their natural resources, etc. This facility will not be limited by any 80-day rule, and as long as the facility is open, we will be able to accept claims after the oil stops as well.
Does that answer it, Patty?
It does, except that Keith's point is that as the law is written, they have to claim, you know, put in their claim, you know, by the 80th day, whether they have been affected yet or not.
I'm not sure that's right, but in any event, I'm not worried about receiving claims after the 80th day, even based on that hypothetical statement last night on television.
Thanks for calling, Patty. Here's an email from Erica, who says, I'm a realtor on Pine Island off Southwest Florida. My business, which was busy through mid-May, has come to a screeching halt since the BP spill. All my buyers are on hold until the spill is resolved. I normally would have income of $16,000 in the months of May and June. I have zero income generated. I called yesterday. On June 24, she says she filed a claim for $16,000 with BP. Then she says, I called yesterday. BP has no record of receiving my claim, though I have a postal receipt indicating it was received. Will my claim be honored?
Well, that gentleman, that lady is raising two questions. First, I am not happy at all to hear that this claim is apparently not even registered with BP. Does this caller have, or this emailer have, a claim number that we can use to track that claim? She says she has a postal receipt. Do we have a claim number that came with that postal receipt? She should have a claim number that we can evaluate and track that claim. Secondly, whether or not there's a valid claim, even if there is a claim number, that is a tough question. We'll have to take a look. I got to look at the facts of the case and see whether or not a claim like that would be valid or not.
And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We're going to take another call. Let's go to Isaac in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm concerning about the time limit. I'm also surprised that the gentleman is comparing this to 9/11 as opposed to Katrina. And during that time, funding from the government and private companies waned after public interest dried up. So is the current administration committed to following through on this funding and making sure BP follows through until the problem is fully rectified?
I agree with that. First of all, I'm not comparing this to 9/11. I'm just saying that when it comes to how you're going to decide eligibility, the 9/11 fund provided some valuable guidance from Congress. This is quite different from 9/11 in terms of the facts, obviously. I think that BP has already committed $20 billion to deal with claims, and BP has committed, even after public attention wanes, BP has also committed to the administration that in the event that $20 billion is insufficient, that it will continue to honor any and all eligible financial obligations that it confronts from additional claimants. Beyond that, I don't know what else I can say other than I have confidence, based on the agreement struck between BP and the administration, that the funds will be there to pay all eligible claims.
Stephen, I gather you have a question.
Yeah, Ken, you mentioned before that state claims would come out of this fund. What about federal claims?
Yes. All governmental claims come out of the $20 billion. Those governmental claims are not part of my evaluative function. I only deal with private claims. Now, that may change in the next few weeks. The BP may decide, let's let the claims administrator resolve the government claims as well, in whole or in part. But right now, the $20 billion may be accessed to pay those governmental claims, but they will not be evaluated by the Gulf Coast Claims Facility.
And finally, James Herron, do you have a last question for Ken Feinberg?
Yes. Can you hear me okay now?
Yes.
Okay.
Excellent. Ken, do you have a sense of the ultimate scale of the the economic compensation that BP is going to have to pay. Is the $20 billion likely to be enough to cover it all? Will they be required to pay more into the fund?
You know, I can only say this. It would be nice if the oil stopped. It's a little difficult to evaluate the total cost of claims as long as that oil is spilling in the Gulf and people don't know in the region whether they'll be impacted. So I think it's premature for me to predict or attempt to predict what the ultimate cost will be. I hope $20 billion is enough, but I'm gratified by the fact that if $20 billion is not enough, BP has agreed to honor its additional financial obligations.
Kenneth Feinberg, he's the government-appointed administrator of the Gulf Claims Facility. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. And by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.
An award-winning media critic turns to Plato, Shakespeare, Thoreau, and others from the past for ideas on how to enjoy the benefits and avoid the pitfalls of living in our digitally connected world. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. Earlier in the program, you heard Kenneth Feinberg, who is the master in charge of distributing the money toward claims that are going to be made against those involved in the BP disaster. There is a fund of $20 billion from BP. Nobody is quite sure yet whether that's going to cover any and all expenses. With me, Stephen Mufsen. He's energy correspondent for The Washington Post. And in London is James Herron. He's Dow Jones Newswire reporter there. They are going to answer the rest of your questions to the best of their knowledge. And here is the first from Paul, who's in Terrell, Texas. He says, I assume BP will be making claims against its own subcontractors, Halliburton among them, for their part in the damage. Can you comment, Stephen?
Well, BP hasn't made any claims so far, but what it's said is that it suggested that the responsibility for this accident is shared, not only by whatever errors BP might have made, but by errors that it thinks its subcontractors might have made, either in the maintenance of the blowout preventer, for example, or in the type of cementing job that a company like Halliburton might have done. And so I think we don't know specifically what BP will do, but I think we can expect them to try to get some of those companies to share the blame and the cost.
James, can you add to that?
Well, I think perhaps a bigger question is whether BP's partners in the world will be willing to pay their share of the costs. Now, there's an American oil company called Anadarko, which has a 25% share of the oil well that's leaking. Now, under the terms of the contract, they would be liable for 25% of the cleanup costs. But Anadarko is claiming that BP is negligent in the cause of the accident, and that would basically mean that BP was liable for 100% of the costs. So and you're talking there about potentially billions of dollars, and this is likely to drag on for years through litigation if they're both contesting each other's claims.
All right, let's go now to Gainesville, Florida. Good morning, Andrea. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I should probably say that I'm an attorney. I don't do tort litigation or anything to do with personal injury. But my question is, it just seems like because the corporation is putting up such an incredible amount of money, it seems like no amount of monetary compensation is really ever going to make up for the economic, environmental, and other kinds of damage that has been caused by the oil spill. And we don't even actually even know when the oil spill is actually even going to stop. And so I'm just wondering if some of your speakers could address this issue of whether or not, you know, the corporation should be dissolved. I mean, it seems like this is really a criminal act, and people every day commit, you know, are accused of committing much lesser crimes and go to prison on this basis. So if the speakers could address that issue.
All right, James.
Well, I have to say I agree with Ken that it would probably be the worst thing for the people who are going to make claims for damages they've suffered from the spill. If BP went bust, they would then go from the position they are now, where there's a fund set up specifically to deal with their needs, to being the back of a long line of other potential claimants of people who BP owes money to. I can understand entirely the desire for people to see BP, you know, getting its due punishment for being responsible for this big disaster, but I think ultimately it's best for everyone in the long run if BP, at least until this process is over and everyone has been made whole, remains as a going concern that can generate enough cash to pay the claims as they come in.
But just following up on that, if those claims are paid, if the oil well is finally capped, if everybody is satisfied that everything has been done, would you expect that BP might be punished in any way further than monetarily, James?
It's possible. Certainly, the Attorney General at the moment is looking into whether criminal charges could be brought against BP. And, you know, if BP were to be found guilty of negligence, criminal negligence, I'm sure there would be BP executives who would face criminal punishments as a result of that. So it really depends on, well, we need more information to come out of the investigation as to what happened on the rig, why particular decisions were made about to proceed with drilling when they knew that there were problems with the well, issues like this, which probably won't be resolved for quite some time.
Stephen.
Well, I think the criminal part is a little tricky because it's not like other corporate criminal cases. You know, we sent Ken Lay to jail, but he had committed fraud, and the government brought criminal charges against Arthur Andersen, which it felt had been sort of a criminal organization because of the extent of false auditing that it filed. But, you know, here it's more of a question of gross negligence when it comes to the operation of the well. So that's in a little bit of a different category. And if you're going to contemplate criminal charges connected to the kinds of exploration plans they filed, well, then, you know, every other oil company has filed similar kind of oil spill plans. And then it's also a question of what responsibility the government had to be paying attention to those things before a spill. I mean, they're the ones who are reviewing these things.
All right, to Sharon, who's in Boca Raton, Florida. Good morning to you.
Good morning. I just wanted to clarify your earlier listener's comments about Keith Olbermann. He was talking about the terms of insurance for a lot of the affected parties, not anything to do with the law itself. There are a number of insurers who insure businesses and individuals affected by this leak who have until today to submit insurance claims. So it has nothing to do with the legal issues or the work that Mr. Feinberg is doing.
All right. Thanks for that clarification. James, any comment?
Well, I think one thing to bear in mind here is that there are a lot of, like, for example, the cap on potential liabilities that BP has chosen to waive. I mean, it seems clear to me that BP is keen to handle this situation in a politically smart way and not to seek shelter behind these, you know, technicalities that could mean it could get off the hook for, you know, the costs of the oil spill. So I'm sure issues like this, were they to come up, would be could be dealt with in a similar way.
All right. To go ahead, Steve, you want to comment?
Well, also, I think the 80-day clock can't possibly start running before the well is capped. So as long as oil is still spilling into the Gulf, that seems to me to be an ongoing disaster. It's not just the date of the accident 80 days ago.
All right. And again to Florida, this time to Panama City. Good morning, Matthew.
Oh, good morning. Oh, yes, I own three businesses down on the water. We're affected. I have a dock photography business at two of the local marinas, and my wife owns a gift shop on one of the marinas. How long is BP going to pay our claims? I mean, will this go on, I guess, perpetually? I mean, will I be paid for years or until my business returns to the 2009 level? Or
Stephen, can you respond?
Well, I don't know exactly, but I would expect that you would be paid as long as the damage from the accident goes on. And I guess that's one of the big unknowns, is how long will it take for life to return to some semblance of what it was before?
James, anything further?
Well, I think Ken said earlier when I asked him about this that he doesn't see any specific limit on how long people will be able to claim for, because, I mean, there could be ecosystem damages which could be still be having an impact decades from now on fish populations, for example. So it's a tricky question, but Ken seemed to be saying earlier that time is not really a sort of a key judgment they'll be making for claims.
And now to La Plata, Maryland. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, I had a couple of observations and then a question. First observation is, I can't believe you're giving Keith Olbermann any kind of credibility on the 80-day rule. He's a graduate of an agricultural school. My second observation is that Ken Lay died before he went to jail, so you don't need to say that. My real question is, everybody wants to blame BP for every glob of oil that washes ashore. In fact, there have been tar balls washing ashore since there have been ships going to sea. And so you cannot blame BP for every single tar ball. Tar balls were showing up on the west coast of Florida days and days before the oil spill got there. So I think that Mr. Feinberg has to find a way to ensure that the damage being done to people's livelihood is due to BP's error and not someone else's. And that's it. I'll listen to your answer online.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Steve.
Well, I think the caller makes a lot of good points. And I think part of there is some benefit to BP about having Ken Feinberg and this fund in place, because he can evaluate things and try to put some limits around the liability and sift through some of the valid claims from the false ones. As you say, the Gulf of Mexico has been, you know, a fairly, you know, polluted waterway in a lot of areas for a long time. You know, I was in Galveston in the 80s. It was kind of a crummy looking beach there then. And this latest report about tar balls in Texas may not be because the spill has washed ashore, but maybe because boats are carrying some of that oil, you know, with them when they go into Texas.
And here's an email from Bruffy, who says, Kenneth Feinberg implied that a hotel 3 blocks off the beach would not be eligible for damages. Does he not believe that that hotel could still be suffering from a loss of business. In fact, any business within a mile or so of the Gulf shoreline is being negatively affected, oil or not, this summer. Steve?
Well, I think that's a good point. But actually what Mr. Feinberg said is that a hotel three blocks away is a tougher call, but still seemed to be likely if there was oil on the beach. I think the thing he said was particularly tough is if you're three blocks away from the beach and there's no oil on the beach and people aren't coming because they perceive that there's oil there. And that he even then he didn't say he would reject that claim, but he just said it was a tougher call.
All right. To Terry, who's in Fort Worth, Texas. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you and your guests. I would just like to make a couple of points. Number one, BP, of course, is doing the best it can to, you know, present a cooperative and a gentlemanly image in all this. And the only thing that really disturbs me about it is that you keep hearing these claims that, you know, the dispersant is dispersing the oil before it, you know, will reach the beaches. Well, it has been known, for instance, since I have a doctorate in biological sciences, by the way, just as a, you know, so you'll know that what I'm saying is not off the cuff. It has been known since the mid-70s that the high molecular weight fraction of oil, otherwise known as the asphaltenes, are resistant to breakdown. They are extremely toxic. Some of those, for instance, benzanthracene, for instance, is a known carcinogen. And these high molecular weight fractions don't degrade, and they hang around in the environment. They're resistant to microbial degradation. You're looking at a fishery that, unless some of the abatement measures, such as you know, letting the Mississippi deposit sufficient silt on top of it to literally bury the stuff, is not going to recover for decades.
Okay, thanks for your call. Steve?
Well, I think you make a lot of good points. I mean, the idea behind dispersants, I think, was to try to break up the oil so that microbes could, you know, in a natural way, break some of this down. But as you say, there are some components in the oil that last a long time. And I think that in past spills, we've seen exactly what you say, and that's why there's still a lot of evidence of oil in the area where the Exxon Valdez accident happened.
All right, and finally, to Steve in Cincinnati, Ohio. Go right ahead, sir.
Yes, so I just wanted to follow up. If, in case, with all this money that they're going to have to pay out, that they do declare bankruptcy, would the federal government be responsible from that point on in cleaning up and paying our claims?
Steve?
Yes, I think so. I mean, who else are you going to turn to in that situation? And that's one reason why I think the administration, after criticizing the company very much and sounding as though it was going to try to drive it out of business, backed off when the $20 billion escrow fund was created and said, it is in all of our interest for BP to remain an ongoing concern.
James, what is it looking like from that end of the pond as far as BP's financial health and stability are concerned?
It's looking a lot better than it was a few weeks back. I think as Stephen said, the establishment of the $20 billion escrow fund really sort of clarified a lot of the issues in people's mind. And the fact that BP has to pay that over 3.5 years makes it a lot more affordable for them. And the company is putting in a lot of other plans to make sure that it's got enough money. It's cancelled its dividend. It's planning to sell at least $10 billion worth of assets around the world to keep a cushion of cash in place to pay compensation demands, to pay demands that for any fines it might face under the Clean Water Act, which could also run into tens of billions of dollars. So, and it's also, it has a strong international business that is making a lot of money with the current high oil price. So it's not looking like there's any great danger that BP will go insolvent. It looks like it can meet all the demands that we've placed on it over the coming years.
Steve.
I agree completely. I mean, I think people often don't appreciate just how huge the oil business is and how much cash the big oil company generates.
Interesting that they don't have insurance. They insure themselves because they are such a large corporation. Stephen Mupson, he's energy correspondent for The Washington Post. James Herron, Dow Jones Newswire's reporter based in London. Earlier, you heard Kenneth Feinberg, the government-appointed administrator of the Gulf Claims Facility. I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.